To order in the interest of getting moving here. Representative Powell, have you had time to examine the minutes and move those?
Yes. So moved, Madam Chair.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Pass. Today's bills to be heard will have House File 301, Representative Haas. I believe you'll be first on the list here. If you would like to bring your bill forward on the fishing contest permit requirements being modified.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
I do need to have somebody move that here.
I'll move House File 301, Madam
Chair. Thank you. To your bill, Representative Haas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I hope this is a relatively simple bill. This came from a sportsman's club in my district, the Painesville Sportsman's Club. A few years back ago, the legislature authorized the DNR to be able to collect application fees for certain fishing tournaments. However, there was a provision within statute that allowed the DNR to waive that to charitable organizations. The DNR, through consultations with the Attorney General's office, decided to define a charitable organization as one that is filed as a 501c3. But for those members who generally are rural, you know, a lot of your charitable nonprofit organizations aren't a 501c3, but they instead file with the Secretary of State as a nonprofit. What I am simply asking here to do is to allow the DNR to waive fees to nonprofit organizations who are not only 501c3s, but also filed with the Secretary of State. This would be kind of the same premise that right now the Gambling Control Board recognizes nonprofits filed through the Secretary of State as being eligible. So I'm just trying to do that for a small sportsman's club so we can have fishing tournaments without a what I think is an unnecessary fee. The individual from the Painesville Sportsman's Club regrets that he can't be here, but with short notice, I'm the only one that's available. So I also apologize to the committee that I'm the only one here. That's about it.
Members, do you have any questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hodge, I'm not going to give you the hard time I gave you on the last time you had a game and fish bill before this committee. Thank you for coming forward. Do you know, is there very many organizations that would fit into this situation? And is there a form that they need to fill out already?
Representative Hodge.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, they already do have to apply for the permit for the fishing tournament. I don't know how many would fall under the possibility of being able to be waived. I know when I originally introduced this bill, the provision just became law, so there was really no hard numbers. Possibly the DNR might have that information, but I do not on the top of my head.
Well, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, do you know what the current fee is for organizations?
Representative Haas.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, it's either $120 or $500 for tournaments that are under 100 participants, depending on if their weighing is on-site or off-site. I believe for my organization that this bill came from was up to a $500 fee they could be charged for that.
Representative Haas, I just had a question. It appears no one else does. Do you know how many organizations might be left that don't fall under this category that might be running a fishing contest after this?
Madam Chair, I do not. And as I said, this is still a relatively new provision, so I'm assuming the DNR would have some stronger numbers from the last time that we pursued this. But I can give you my commitment that I can find out those answers.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is DNR going to testify on the bill? Is DNR going to testify?
Yes, I believe there's an indication that they will. Would you like to come forward at this time, Mr. Boggess?
It's your committee. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for the Department of Natural Resources. And I don't have hard numbers, but did ask our staff to do some estimates. And we've heard from three of the four regions. In 2008, we issued 444 permits. 362 of those were for open water, 82 were for ice fishing, and those brought in $71,200 in permit fees. The regions that have responded estimate that broadening the exemption, as in Representative Hosh's bill, would increase the number of exemptions by about 20 to 24%. So of those, and we had already seen a decline of about 25% in the number of permits that we issued once the fees were initiated. So some people, they don't require a permit if they're in a certain number of boats, and so some people probably split their tournaments to avoid having to pay the fee to start with. So we would estimate a 20 to 25% decline in that 444 permits, so roughly another 80 to 100 and some permit reduction. And I would just point out for the committee, remind the committee that 2 years ago, the Budget Oversight Committee of that looks at game and fish funds for the Department of Natural Resources recommended that we recover the cost, that the cost of administering the fishing contest permits be recovered through the permit fees. So that was the bill that passed. The charitable exemption language was not originally in our proposal, but was added, and we were left with trying to figure out what a charitable organization was. And as Representative Hosh said, we used the 501c3 definition. It would broaden it considerably to also add not-for-profit organizations to that exemption, and we would not recover the cost of administering these contest fees unless we would raise the fees that we're charging the remainder of the contest participants. Right now, those are set in law. You can see them in the bill. At least the maximum is set in law. You can see them in the bill on the top of page 2. So we would, under those existing maximums, we would not be able to recover the cost. We'd have to either raise those or give up on the idea of fully recovering the cost of administering the contest.
Thank you, Mr. Bogus. Are there any other questions? Well, it is the intent then of this committee to lay this over for possible inclusions, and I think I would like to also bring up at this time that this is not a finance committee, it's rather policy. And so some of those issues of finance will most likely be delved into more thoroughly in finance committees. But at this point in time, if there are no other questions, no further testimony, we'll lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hosh. All right. Representative Tao, I believe you have a bill for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I don't have any flyers or testifiers. These are bills that you're sitting in the stand and you're like, why can't we do this or why can't we do this? And so I'm a bear hunter myself, and after being in the stand and not seeing anything, I came up with these bills.
Representative Tao, I would just ask you to move your bill. Thank you.
Okay. I would like to move my bill, please, for proper inclusion in the omnibus,
I believe. Yes.
Okay.
Well, continue, please.
All right. There are two parts to this bill. The first part is to allow portable stands in WMAs. And currently, the current law is you have to take down your portable stand, and then the next morning go put back up, and then go sit in it. In the evening, you got to take it back down. And I think it'll be okay. It'll be okay for the hunter to leave it where they intend to hunt or over their bait. Because their name is right there. So you know whose stand that is. And you know who intend to come and hunt there. And then there's also a safety issue. A friend of mine, Representative Delano, it didn't happen on a WMA, but he was going up and down, taking his stand down, putting new stand up, and he fell off of a tree. He survived, but it was very hard for him to hunt that whole year. And so this could potentially be save a bear hunter bill with this provision here. The second provision, the barrel, allowing a non-mechanical barrel to put bait in. The current law right now is, as I understand it anyway, a friend of mine, he's been baiting. And right now you have to, the system that most hunters use anyway, they dig a hole or they put in a little hole and then they throw the donuts, if you have donuts, you throw in there and you put a pile of log over it. That's sort of the current system. I have a friend, he used an old t-shirt. Because I think current law is it's biodegradable, you could put the bait in and it won't violate the law. And so a friend of mine used an old t-shirt, ties a end up, put the donuts in the t-shirt, hangs it from a tree. Apparently I think that's legal. So what my proposal does is we're only going to allow barrels where you put the bait in on private lands only. And we'll see how that works in a couple of years. We'll revisit on potentially WMA or public land. So I don't know if you guys have any questions or... I know that there's a couple of folks that might not like it.
Members, have any questions? Representative Dale.
Thank you. Representative Tal, if this is on private land, I understand. So would you envision that you would ask the landowner? It doesn't say this in the bill, but would you ask the landowner if it's okay to use the barrel then? On the property, would you be amenable to including that in the language that the landowner has to give permission?
Thank you.
Representative Tal.
Madam Chair and members, I guess if you already have permission to hunt, it's either your land, and so you won't need to ask yourself, or your friend's land, and he either give permission for you to hunt, and if you put a barrel without his consent, I think he could just kick you off of the land, I guess. And so I don't think we need to put that in the bill. I would prefer that the hunter and the landowner work that out between themselves. So.
Are there any further questions? Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if Representative Tal knows the answer to this question. We might have to have someone from DNR come down, or maybe Representative Cornish can answer the question for me. On the portable stands, I think with portable stands now and on state forest lands and wildlife management areas where you can deer hunting, I think you can leave your stand overnight, but that then is subject to someone else coming along and using that stand, and if there's somebody else in your stand when you get there in the morning, you have to let that person use that stand. I'm not sure. I'd like to have that clarified, if we could. If somebody could either come down from the DNR or... And if that pertains to this, then, if we're going to allow this on the wildlife management areas now, then, say you get there in the morning and you want to bear hunt, somebody else is in it, then maybe that person has to, you have to allow that person to use your portable stand. You can't kick them out of it.
Representative Dale.
I'd like to also then hear, as also I see Mr. Meyer came down, usually when bear hunters just don't randomly hunt.
Right.
They're hunting over bait, and a bait has to be registered. And so if someone was going to use your stand and they were going to hunt over bait, they would have had to place the bait, put a sign up, and register it, I think, on the Internet, I think. But maybe Mr. Meyer can help us with
that. Well, Madam Chair, that's why I want this clarified. I understand that about there, but I wanted it, that question answered about deer hunting, too.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, members, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Representative Hackworth, the easier part of your question is the first part of your question, talking about a stand that is erected on state forest land, and I believe it would apply to a WMA, that if you leave it there overnight, a person can come in and use that stand. Again, actually, it's language that was crafted during probably three sessions ago where we were talking about using permanent stands on state forest lands. The department did have a bill to prohibit that from actually taking place. Placing property in that state forest, permanent or portable, I believe, would allow a person to come in and use that because it's there for the use. I mean, an ethical hunter will not do that, but there are situations that you hear of where people come in and they are in somebody's stand. So that is an issue that is out there. As far as the registering of the base stations, they do need to be registered. You have to provide a GPS location for that base station. Put your name on there, driver's license number, identify it. But current law prohibits somebody from hunting within 100 yards of that. So there's kind of a gray area, I think, on that, the piece with leaving a portable stand up overnight in a WMA over a bait station, but you know, there's not a tie in this section of the language here. This just says a portable stand allowed, may be allowed. Portable stands allowed in a WMA for bear hunting may be left overnight for the use in bear hunting bear. Not everybody hunts over bait. Probably 99.5% of people will hunt over bait, but it does create some problems, and we are concerned about the encroachment, the usurping of those public rights, leaving the stand in overnight for bear hunting or deer hunting or anything else on a wildlife management area. And I sent out a weekly email update every Friday, and I've gotten quite a few comments from people, bow hunters in particular, about this language and the concern not only of the WMA stand piece, but I don't know if they were clear that the language only prohibits or allows a barrel to be used on private land or not, but there is concern about litter being dragged into the state forest, into the wildlife management areas. There's enough litter out there right now. I spent Saturday picking up about 2 55-gallon trash bags full of pop cans and bottles and beer cans and things like that on a lake that I was ice fishing on, and it's just amazing the amount of junk that people leave out there, and it occurs in our wildlife management areas all over the place. So I understand that the concern or what Representative Powell is trying to do. I think if the committee does decide to move forward on the barrel piece, we need to talk about what a barrel is. We certainly don't need any more animals running around with barrels stuck over their head or whatever it might be, or these things being pulled into state property. Currently, I know the Canadian province of Ontario allows a 55-gallon drum chained to a tree. Your name has to be permanently etched on or attached to that barrel. So we are concerned about the littering, the encroachment issues, and things like that.
Representative McNair.
Well, thank you. But Commissioner Meyer, you said that the portable stands aren't currently allowed to be left in a WMA overnight, correct?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Different than you can construct a duck blind that can be left overnight in a WMA, but it's that preempt clause. If somebody else is in there in the morning, doesn't matter who built it. It like becomes part of the public. So, Commissioner, if I could ask you, the fact if you had a bear license, you could conceivably both hunt bear and deer with a bow and arrow at the same time. And I've often, Representative Tao, I actually think we should think about the possibility of leaving the stands overnight, and this might be a chance to kind of test that in some respects. But Assistant Commissioner, I was wondering, is Camp Ripley a WMA? It is not?
No.
Mr. Meyer?
that would not come under this qualification, because I know that's a big deal for the portables that are in those hunts up there.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, it's not a WMA, but they do require you to take down your stand every night.
Right.
You cannot leave your stand up overnight,
right,
in the Camp Ripley hunts and all as well. So.
Thank you. That's an answer, Mike.
And on the deer, after deer season opens, you can hunt on bear hunt and deer hunt after the 15th of September, I believe it is.
Representative Dill.
Well, I guess that was, thank you, Madam Chair. But there is an overlap. Doesn't the bear season usually run till like the 10th of October or something? So there is a potential overlap there.
That's fair, yes. Thank you.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then Commissioner Meyer. So if a bear bait is registered, whether there's a stand or not, another hunter, regardless of if he is baiting somewhere, he cannot go in and hunt within 100 feet of that stand, or that bait that's registered. 100 yards. I'm sorry, 100 yards.
While some of our testifiers are conferring, are you ready, Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Dill, yes. Mr. Bogus was just conferring with me that the law or rule doesn't actually require you to hunt over your own bait, but you have to be a licensed bear hunter hunting over a registered bait station. So, theoretically, a person could come in if you had a bear license for that zone, and I'd hate to think about what would happen, but you could go in there and legally hunt over that bait station if it was a legal bait station.
All right, and then a follow-up.
Representative Dale.
So then during that overlap period between deer and bear, September 15th to October 15th, you answered my question. Now that I think about how you phrased the answer, I was thinking about a deer hunter coming along now and having a registered bait and a stand, let's say 30 yards from the bait, and now a deer hunter who's not participating in the bear hunting would climb up in the stand and be in the stand over a bait, but yet he was deer hunting. I'm just trying to figure all that out and how that would all interplay with each other and if that's a possibility as well.
Commissioner Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Dill. I think it could be a scenario that could take place somewhere by allowing this, and that's one of the things that we, WMAs are there. If you've ever hunted WMAs a lot, you go there, if somebody's there, most people will turn around and leave, or you'll go to a different parking lot or things like that. But it is a public resource, so it's basically on a first-come, first-served basis. Bear hunting, of course, is a little bit different, where you put a lot of time and effort into hunting on those areas and establishing these stations. But you could have somebody who theoretically would be able to come in and hunt on that spot, because it is, if all things were equal, it is a first come, first serve
option. Manager, one last call.
Representative Dale.
All right, so in a WMA, you can register a bait and you can bait there and you can leave your bait there continuously during the entire hunting season, and you can continue to refurbish your bait, but you can't leave a stand so that you can hunt overnight.
Madam Chair, Representative Dale, yeah.
Got it.
Representative McNamara.
Deputy Commissioner, I got one more. the no quota zone, is it determined in law to be the rest of the state that's not a quota zone?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, it's by rule. We established, well, part of the discussion we were having last week about this time was the establishment of seasons versus statute versus rule. We established all of our hunting seasons and areas by rule. So if you look at a map, there's a line. Usually we try to follow major highway corridors and things like that, geographical boundaries. And it is the rest of the state, but practically speaking, it's only where there are bears, and there's not a lot of bears down in Caledonia area, places like that, at least not yet.
Representative McNamara.
But, Commissioner, there are a lot of WMAs, and someone may, for the price of a bear license, think it's advantageous to have a stand in a WMA. The majority of WMAs aren't in the bear zone. I'm just thinking through that. Again, Representative Powell, I like the idea of not having to drag those stands around as much, but there are some issues here that we should be thinking it out as we talk about this and how it all fits together. Because there's a lot of people that hunt the very first days of the bull season that this would have implications for them potentially.
Madam Chair, just along that line, there are some concerns that if you do decide to go down this road, how long can a person leave up a stand for? Many active bait stations that I've been familiar with, they put stands up soon before the season opens, and they can remain for several weeks sometimes. We would need identification, making sure that we clearly knew whose stand that was. How would we determine what is when the stand went up versus what is overnight? I mean, how long has it been in the woods for? So if this were to take place, we may have to think about how would you get a permit or something from the ELS system to leave that stand in there so we would know whose it is and how long it's been there for, and be able to, like we do with the shelter, be able to identify that person if it is left there for longer than it's supposed to be.
Representative Dill.
Oh, Madam Chair. So you can get a bear license, place a bait in the WMA, you can sign it that it belongs to you, you can leave it in there the entire length of the season, you can refresh it the entire time, but you can't leave a stand overnight, or you can't leave a stand for the entire season. Is that correct?
Commissioner,
I'm sure, yeah.
I've got it.
Thank you.
Thank you. I understand there is someone present that wishes to testify on this. Yeah, Howard Goldman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Howard Goldman. I'm the State Director for the Humane Society of the United States, and we have 180,000 members in the state of Minnesota, and we oppose Representative Tower's bill, particularly the second part, with respect to the use of barrels to bait black bears. Minnesota hunters have taken on average 3,400 bears over the past 10 years. However, in 2007, only 3,172 were taken, and in 2008, only 2,005. Dr. Garshalis, the principal researcher for the DNR bear researcher, after examining the data for 2007, came to the following conclusions. He found a diminishing median age among harvested females, indicating that there may be a downturn in the population. In addition, a high harvest of radio collared bears suggested to the doctor that the population was in fact declining. And all of his reservations were borne out last year when only 2,005 bears were taken. And he believes that the population has fallen now below 20,000. Over the past several years, he's estimated the population to be between 20 and 30,000, and oftentimes would indicate it was around 25,000. This is a pretty unsettling trend, needless to say. Moreover, the landscape in Minnesota is changing. Wildlife watchers now outnumber hunters by a factor of three. There's almost 2 million wildlife watchers in the state, according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. 48% of the population of Minnesota is a wildlife watcher. This leads me into this general discussion of baiting, which, of course, everyone understands is 80% of the bears taken are taken over bait piles, pastry, meat scraps. It's a controversial practice, even among some hunting groups, especially controversial amongst the public. Where is the sport, many of us ask? It seems to violate one of the principal hunting ethics, the ethic of fair chase. when you shoot a bear over a bait pile. Moreover, the baiting of bears for the purpose of hunting conditions bears to obtain food from humans, creates problem bears. It's an unhealthy and unnatural diet, creates a significant increase in public safety, and damage to private property. The U.S. Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Park Service, all published materials telling the public not to feed bears. The U.S. Forest Service, for example, published materials that warns a fed bear is a dead bear. Tom Beck, the hunter and bear biologist in the Colorado Division of Wildlife, stated the following: "I firmly believe that baiting creates nuisance bears. Black bears are naturally wary, instinctively avoiding close contact with humans, but large amounts of tasty food easily obtained defeats this wariness. By baiting, we create lazy bears who've been rewarded, not punished, for overcoming their fear of humans. We believe, therefore, that baiting should not be expanded in the state. We think this is what will happen if Representative Tao's bill is passed. And for these reasons, I urge you to oppose House File 477. Thank you."
Thank you, Mr. Golden. Other questions? Representative Cornish.
To the testifier, I guess I'm proud to say that I killed about 50 of the bear in those statistics, but I disagree with most of what you said. I think before 1972, about in that area, the bear were unprotected, and the people were shooting them at resorts with their head in a can and on site and in crops and letting them run off. And bear hunting season is probably the best thing that ever happened to the bear. We use decoys to take ducks. We use decoys to take deer. It's just an accepted method of practice to take bear with bait. That's the only way there is to hunt them. And if they don't hunt them, they're going to become overpopulated, and then they decimate the corn and the oats crops up in northern Minnesota. And so there has to be some way to control them, and baiting is the only way to do that. You can't go out and stalk a bear like you can a deer. And so as unpleasant as it may seem to you, it's an accepted practice for years. And I guess I refute your, just because you're an animal watcher doesn't mean you disapprove of hunting. I think we overwhelmingly passed the right to fish and hunt in this state, and the reason, I think, is a lot of animal watchers know that hunting is needed as a biological, the way humans control the animal population and still love it. So I guess I disagree with most of what you said, and long story short.
Mr. Goldman, do you have a response?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Cornish, I worked very closely with Roger Holmes and Tom Isley when the bear management plan was first put into place in 1972, and I agree completely with your comments about what's transpired since that point. And I recognize the department for the very good work it's done. I think we have one of the best bear management programs in the country. And I'm not here advocating an end to bear baiting by any means. What I'm simply saying is we don't believe it should be expanded, particularly in light of the declining numbers of bears in the state, and in some respects because of the nature of bear baiting itself.
Representative Gill.
Could we have Mr. Meyer come back up?
Mr. Meyer? Thank you, Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Commissioner Meyer, Goldman said that using a barrel would increase baiting. In other words, it alluded to the fact that more people would bait if we used a barrel. How do you feel about that statement?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Dill, I'm not sure. I mean, it's really a question you should have probably asked him, but maybe people would be able to preserve their bait longer from the elements or something like that, or be able to put more bait out depending on how many barrels you had. Myself, being a bear hunter, I think it'd be a lot more work to be dragging a barrel around and making sure it was chained up and things like that to establish bait stations.
Madam Chair, let me rephrase that question.
Representative Dill.
What percentage of hunters bait now that get bear licenses? You said some percentage earlier about something.
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Dill, I'm assuming most, if not all, do.
So, Representative Dill.
So the statement that they would be, there would be more people baiting than probably isn't accurate. That's what I'm trying to get at. I think you said 99. Actually, you should know of all the bear licenses issued. We could find out from the department how many people registered baits, knowing that, you know, people are ethical and law-abiding. And we should be able to find out that there are probably very few people hunting without bait.
Madam Chair, Representative, we can run that query and get that information if you so desire it. It's just a matter of running the database.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Are there any additional testifiers or questions? Representative Powell.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. It looks like the DNR is open to working on this issue further. I'm open to working on it. To me, it's important that at the end of the day, the stand gets left on the WMA intended for bear hunting only. I'm willing to work on language to make sure that we move in that direction. You know, Representative Dill, you hit right on. You have to register your site, and that's your site. And you've been baiting all summer. No one will come and sit up there. That's just going to be your stand. And in regards to the deer, once the deer show up and they start dropping, you know, they eat and they drop right there. They drop their feces right there. You will not see any deer within a couple hundred yards because they don't want to be next to a deer. I could tell you that from my experience. And then, you know, I have, bought 4 licenses in the last 4 years. And I've seen one bear, so the myth of, we're just...
I'm here.
Representative Dill.
Representative Tal, could you tell them what happened when you shot at the bear?
Oh, the bear that I saw, Madam Chair and members, the bear that I saw was 30 yards away. I had a rifle and a scope. I should have my bow. I missed it.
Thank you, Representative.
It was huge. It was big.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Representative Hackler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I came in late. I'm assuming you're going to hold us over for possible inclusion in the Game and Fish Bill?
That is correct.
Okay. And I think, you know, it's not a controversial bill, Representative Powell. I think we can make this work, but I do think both sections need a little tweaking, and I hope you do work with the Commissioner Meyer and the DNR to get this thing straightened out, because you do have problems with both areas of this bill, but I think we can make it work. I think if we look at some of the things that Ontario is doing with their barrels, maybe we can make that work. So I think it's a good thing to do. I just think it needs a little work.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Good.
Are there any additional comments or questions? Well, if not, Representative Tao, I certainly encourage you as well to work on some of these issues, including the barrel situation, because it is true that there was a lot of consternation last year with the bear with his head in the bucket. And we probably aren't looking forward to doing that again this year. And I would also further like to remind regarding the biodegradable materials, the T-shirts, that only those that are actually 100% cotton will readily biodegrade. Those that are polyester will not. So we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
To that point,
Representative McNamara.
Well, you made a great point. Would you be able to use, if Representative Gardner's bill passed, in readily available biodegradable plastic bags made from corn to help our hurting agriculture economy? Would we have to redefine plastic?
Representative McNamara, that may be something that Representative Tao looks into as this bill is discussed further before its inclusion. Representative Purcell.
Thank you. Just to follow up on Representative McNamara, that corn bag might prove to be a pretty good bait. I don't know.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Dill.
One last thing. I'd like to caution Representative Tao. You said in your testimony that after baiting all summer, I think you better check the regs and know that that starts on August 15th, Representative Tao. And maybe Mr. Conrad would like to talk to you after this meeting is over.
Autumn summer.
All right. This bill is laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Dill, I believe you have House File 128. Representative Dill, welcome to the other end of the committee, and would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 128, and I'd have to ask Mr. Cadell, where are we moving it to?
I see that it's recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Environment
Policy.
Yeah, Policy and Oversight.
Okay, I'd like to move the bill, House File 128, and then, Madam Chair, I'd like to also move the amendment, the delete all amendment, the 128DE3 amendment, to get the bill in the shape that the authors would like to have it in.
Very well. The DE3 amendment has been moved. Are there any questions on the DE3 amendment? Or would you want to have that included later, or just
no,
write
it
at this point?
No, take a vote on it now to get it in the shape that we need it.
That was what I expected. Are there any questions on the DE3 amendment? If not, all in favor of this amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like, I'll say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Hey, Madam Chair. The bill, members, before you is about having an uncased firearm. Predominantly, the purpose is for using it during hunting season. And it is a convenience and safety matter for hunters that is long, long overdue. And I'm going to, before we go any further, you'll probably see, I think you see, some pictures. And this is the reason why I brought the bill forward. They can continue to run like that.
Okay.
This is the reason that I brought the bill forward. Because in real life and in practicality, people are constantly on motor vehicles, including ATVs, four-wheelers, Class 2, Class 1, pickup trucks, everything imaginable that's a motor vehicle, and doing it totally illegally. And you only have to look at that picture to see what I'm talking about. And we only have to look at that picture to see what I'm talking about. And then the next picture you're going to see is a bunch of kids at a trap shooting club going to the clubhouse. This was at a kids' youth event. That picture that you saw earlier of the kids. And they're on a motor vehicle going to the clubhouse after they've shot their round of trap at the Minnesota State Trap Shooting Tournament. There's a picture of people going to the other end of a pheasant hunting field after they've made a drive or going to another field. And so there's this constant controversy and undercurrent about uncased firearms on motor vehicles. Now, there's a lot of difference between our bill, Representative Cornish and my bill. In fact, members, in 2003, I brought this up in an amendment in the Environment Policy Committee, and I thought I was going to have to get a paint scraper to take Cornish off the roof because he just had a fly apart right in committee. And now he sits before me as a co-author and has been instrumental in helping put this bill together, actually. And this bill is not about fair chase. There will still be fair chase. Hunters, we regulate hunters that are ethical. And we prosecute and we capture hunters who are unethical. This is about a duck hunter who is in a boat and takes a duck and wounds a duck. And now it's flopping around out on the water. He has to unload his gun. He has to put it in a case. Then he starts the motor, and then he pursues the duck. He has to shut the motor off. He has to stop the boat. He has to take the gun out of the case, load the gun, shoot the duck, unload the gun if he put more than one shell in it, put the gun back in the case, and then go after the duck. And if he didn't kill it with that shot, he has to start that whole process over and over and over until... And then if he gets the duck on the last shot, he has to unload it, case it, go get the duck, and then go back and start the hunt over. This law is not practical. Our law isn't, and our law, with what Representative Cornish and I are proposing, isn't like North Dakota or South Dakota, where they allow a different variations of loaded, in the chamber, in the magazine. This doesn't have anything to do with taking game or changing any law about shooting across a road, down a road, over a road, whether you shoot a small game, whether you shoot a big game. It changes none of that. It doesn't change, under the amendment, the provisions for schools. It doesn't, and it also allows that an uncased firearm cannot be uncased at any time in a city that has an ordinance prohibiting the discharge of a firearm. This is the thought behind the process that would get hunters able to... I'd like to also say that this doesn't mean that the department can't teach hunter safety about casing guns. This doesn't say that you can't case your gun, because you can case your gun under this bill. What it says is that you can have an uncased firearm, and it has to be unloaded. That is the big difference between the other states that we were compared to and the bill that's before you today. At no time when the gun is on a motor vehicle, whether it's in a case or uncased, may it be loaded, either in a magazine or in the chamber. At no time in this bill do we change current law where it says that the gun can't be discharged from a motor vehicle. We are not changing any of that. You cannot discharge this from a motor vehicle, except in the case of a boat, where the motor would still have to be stopped, and the forward progress, is that correct, Representative Cornish? The forward progress also has to be stopped. We're not changing any of that. And one of the things that I remember in the concealed carry debate that came from law enforcement during that debate, because the law enforcement community essentially, as I understand it, was against the concealed carry, that there were going to be, you know, road rage and more domestic violences and more incidents of accidents, people having loaded firearms concealed. And I just asked this committee and asked others to tell us, when did that happen since the concealed carry passed? This also does not allow, unless you have a concealed, this bill that's before you, does not allow a pistol to be uncased at all under any circumstance, unless you have a concealed carry permit, and then it has no effect on that whatsoever. It has no bearing, correct? The way we drafted this has no bearing on a person that has a concealed carry permit. So this bill is a common sense approach to something that's really been a culture in Minnesota. A culture that you've got to have your gun case or it isn't safe. And members, that's just not true. If that were the case, we wouldn't allow hunting. Because we'd have people afield, people next to vehicles, people walking down roads, people in these pictures or in vehicles with their guns in case, that would all be unsafe, and we'd have accidents up the gazoo, but we don't. So this is the essence of this bill. It's nothing about any high-flying intent to have crime or any of those things. And I'm going to let Representative Cornish talk about some of the technicalities and some of the things that he is far more versed in his former role as a conservation officer, and let him talk about the letters that we received from other states regarding some of the issues that were brought up in a previous committee regarding safety and fair chase. I mean, members, fair chase. If you're going to poach a deer, do you think that you're going to worry about getting a ticket for an uncased gun, or that you're not going to be able to get the case gun out and shoot out the window, or in the dark under a spotlight? You're going to worry about the case bill. If you're going to rob a grocery store or a drugstore, do you think that the person who's going to do that violent act is going to have a case on their gun because they're afraid to get a ticket for an uncased firearm? When they're going to rob a grocery store or a bank or a drugstore, that's the last thing on their mind. This is about ethical hunters, ethical people,
who engage in fair chase, and let's arrest the rest of them, because that's what we should be doing. Representative Cornish.
Representative Cornish.
Madam Chair and members, just a few points here to reiterate what Representative Dill has done a good job of telling you. In my conversations with the chief law enforcement person in Arizona and North Dakota and South Dakota, all three agreed that they did not see this as an officer safety issue. They haven't had any instances which they would officer safety issues came from an uncased gun. They've had a number of issues where they've had officer or hunter incidents, but to their knowledge, nothing that originated from an uncased gun situation in the first place. Also, the states say that they do in their hunter education classes still teach to keep the gun unloaded. The accidents stated in the DNR's report, if you look through them, like 26 accidents, every one had to do with a loaded gun. And that's the big difference when you take accident statistics from states that have loaded guns, or loaded in the magazine in North Dakota and loaded in the chamber in South Dakota. They shouldn't be compared to this bill, because this will be an unloaded firearm. And most of the accidents, all of them I looked at, it was either shooting somebody in the foot or swinging on game or something that really didn't have hardly anything to do with the case gun. So I don't think it was a good comparison. So in the fair chase, the situation, in my experience, it's two separate actions. If somebody, you always seem to meet a profile and somebody, there's an opportunist, sure. But I can't see what the cases they've got nowadays, you only have to have one thing snapped in the side of these plastic cases. And just to hit one of them and the thing is open and you grab the gun, there's no difference between that and having it laying on the seat. That's not the determining factor if somebody is going to shoot over a no trespassing sign or shoot out the window. I don't think the case is the determining factor. So I don't think this has anything to do with fair chase. I think it's just common sense legislation. Some of your immediate reaction, some people when you ask about things say, what, you crazy? But then you explain and you talk them through it, and then they kind of see the light. It's just because it's been like this since 1919, everybody automatically thinks that, boy, we haven't had certain violations or nobody's got shot because we've had it in the case, which really didn't have anything to do with it. It's the officers that he's given these good hunter education safety classes through our state, one of the best in the nation in hunter ed safety, and it's because the gun is unloaded instead of loaded like it is in the Dakotas. So I guess I would entertain any questions that you have about the proposal we've explained so far.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And either Representative Dill or Representative Cornish, last week I asked a question about the 20-gauge single shot and taking that apart. Is there anything in the DE amendment on like disassembly of the firearm? Did you put anything in relating to that?
Representative Cornish.
I don't know if it was ever like that. I suppose maybe years and years ago, but breaking them down doesn't make them legal anymore. And to break them down, you very rarely ever see the old hinge type of the forearm anymore that you could break down. And it would make it's about impossible to break these fancy Benelli's and everything else down now, so it wouldn't be practical. So we didn't include anything like that.
I have one more comment.
Representative Dill.
Okay. In talking, maybe Representative Cornish said this while I was trying to figure out how to work the computer. In talking to some conservation officers, both in Minnesota and in North Dakota, retired conservation officers, because I knew that we weren't going to be able to get any active ones on the spot on this one, they said that they were far more concerned about approaching a group of deer hunters that were standing in a woods with loaded guns than they ever would be in approaching a vehicle with hunters in them with unloaded guns, even if they were uncased. Because under the circumstance, when they're out in the woods, people are walking around, they're not focused on what maybe the conservation officer is talking to one person, and the guns are being pointed, maybe you said that, in all different directions. And particularly they talked about pheasant hunters coming out of a cornfield, for example, and all of a sudden there's a conservation officer and they get together and they're nervous, is everybody legal, and that guns are pointed in all different directions, and it's a lot different than when you approach a vehicle. And lastly, on the report, when you folks read the report, if that was provided to all the members of this committee at the last hearing,
One of the things that greatly troubled me in the report was it talked about fair chase and at how that if we had uncased firearms as a part of our culture here in Minnesota, that it would diminish the public's tolerance for hunting. Well, as I recall, we had a constitutional amendment that passed that guaranteed the right to hunt and fish that passed with well over 70% of the vote. And so to imagine that the public, other than maybe Mr. Goldman, tolerates hunting is almost beyond my comprehension when it's guaranteed in the Constitution. And lastly is if fair chase is really an issue in this bill or in other sets of circumstances, then why isn't the department coming forward and saying, well, we need to ban depth finders or certainly aqua views? I mean, you drop a damn camera down there and put it in front of a fish and then put the line in front of it, and they're worried about two lines with Representative Junkie. So I'm only saying that this fair chase issue is not a part of our bill in terms that there will not be encroachments onto the ethical use of firearms when hunting. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Members, are there any questions? I will then ask if there's anyone in the audience that has further testimony that they would like to bring forward. If not, Representative Dill renews the motion that House File 128, as amended, be recommended to pass to the Committee on Environment and Policy Oversight. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Jim gets the power. Yep, he read the minutes. Meeting is adjourned.
Thanks.